Welcome. My name is Sharon, and I serve the village's education lead. And it is my pleasure to introduce Linda Jensen, who is Holden Village's historian extraordinaire. Is that your title, Linda? I think so. She has been in the village all week, which we're thrilled with, and has led two walks. And tonight's topic is Bridging Two Communities, and a plug for Thursday at 6 in Fireside is Holden Village's early history. So Linda, take it away.
Thank you. And welcome. My name is Linda Powell Jensen, as she said, and I lived in the mining village from 1951 to 1955. The program this evening, Sharon, do you want to catch those lights? The program you're going to see tonight addresses the parallels between the two communities, and I think you'll be surprised to see that many of the activities that were enjoyed by the residents in the 1940s and 50s are also still popular with the residents of Holden Village. I'd like to clarify some information that was mentioned this afternoon, and I mentioned it to Dan afterwards. There is evidence that prospectors did set fire to the valley, but it was not J.H. Holden. Actually, the Great Northern Railroad was through the valley in 1887, and they documented the visible ore outcroppings, which is one of the reasons that Holden came up into the valley in 1896. This is J.H. Holden, and this is the prospector who found the ore body in 1896, and as I said, he didn't burn the valley. But that really started the history of the Holden mine. He came in and dug a few tunnels and did ore samples, but his main objective was he leased the property out to other mining companies, and there were several that leased it over a 30-year period. Howsam Company, or Britannia Company, took a lease in 1928, and they purchased the property in 1930 and formed this as a division of their Howsam Company. It was known as Howsam Company Chelan Division. And thus they started building in early 1930, but quit because of the Depression. This is early workmen. Maybe I need to push it real quick. This is very early workmen that were up in the Honeymoon Heights area where the ore body was located. It was found on Copper Mountain, quite high. And as you can see, the conditions were primitive, pretty heavy work clothing. This is a picture of some bridges that were built in the valley early on to go across wetland areas. We're not sure exactly where it was taken, but as you can see, they were narrow crude bridges, big enough for pack animals and people and maybe a few tools and equipment. This is one of the first, quote, roads. Actually, it was a trail with pack horses that brought equipment up. The reason it took so long to develop this mine was the problem of getting the ore from here to the lake. And initially the plans were that they would build a road bed. This was the start of a railroad bed. This was the start of a railroad bed and to early 30s. And you can see this is near the top of the switchbacks because that's Lake Chelan down in the corner there. By the time Howsam took over and bought the company and started again in 36 or 37, the trucking industry had advanced significantly. So they abandoned the railroad and made it into just a regular road, which is a little bit more improved than it used to be. When Howsam came back in 1936, in 1936 and 37, they began aggressive building in the mine and mill area. This is building in the mine and mill area, you can see that, and the town site. And everything was completed in 1938, all the building was completed. This is a picture of the first footbridge that was built across Railroad Creek by the company. It was covered 2 years later in 1940. We believe it was built in 38. The picture is from the Penberthy collection. And the covering of the bridge was an important safety factor because most of the snowstorms up here were hitting at night, And men would be going to work early in the morning across the bridge to the mine and mill, and so having the bridge covered protected it from icy surface. The first shipment of ore left Lucerne Dock in April of 1938. This is the arrival of the ore. It was set out with great excitement here and a lot of people down there when it left. This is the arrival in Chelan, and there were politicians, dignitaries, business people, and the ore was loaded onto the trucks and followed by a parade down to the railroad station at Beebe to be shipped to the smelter in Tacoma, because as you can imagine, this mine was a big economic boom to the area. This is a picture of the early town site. Looks pretty similar to what you see today. The company wanted to keep good employees. It was a company town. If you lived here, you worked here for the mine, except the postmaster was the exception. In many company towns, the workers lived in bunkhouses. Howe Sound built these, built these very nice dorm rooms, two men to a dorm, to a room, and each floor had one room for a single person. And as you can see, and of course they had sturdy furniture. Some of you are probably still sleeping on those steel beds. They also had their own sink. They each had their own closet and in their room, so much nicer. At the one end of the hallway, just as there are today, were the full bathrooms with showers and toilets, etc. But these were very nice accommodations for the workers. And of course, the dining hall. The dining hall, again, fed the workers these very high-calorie meat and potato-type meals served by waitresses carrying platters. If a platter was empty on a table, the guys would hold it up and it would be replaced with a full platter. They also had an area in the far corner for the workers to make their lunches to go to work. And now, the concept is the same, but I can assure you the high-calorie lunch meats, pastries, and snacks that they had is quite different from the high-calorie bar that we have with hummus and veggies and cheese. The Gaffey building was our hospital building. There was a fully equipped examining room, a four-bed ward, and there was also a fully equipped dentist room. And the dentist would come in from Chelan periodically to do dental work. There was a doctor here at all times, and usually a nurse, and most often the doctor and nurse were a husband and wife team. The last 2 years the mine was in operation, the husband and wife team doctor were willing to deliver babies, so we actually had babies born here in the late years. There were a few born in early years, not planned that way. Again, they wanted to keep happy workers. The recreation hall, we called it the rec hall, you know it as the village center, was multi-purpose. At the time this gymnasium was built, it was the state-of-the-art gymnasium in the state of Washington, and had this beautiful finished floor, and you could not walk on it unless you had the special rubberized gym shoes. And basketball was played there regularly during the winter. I believe the village plays basketball there in the winter. And they had teams come in from the outside to play against Holden teams. And in the late 30s, the guy couldn't remember which year, 38 or 39, the team from Holden Village won the state amateur basketball championship. This was also, as it is with the village, multi-purpose. If we had our other activities, the floor was always covered with these large sheets of canvas, and then chairs were set up. We had movies three times a week. We had, this is where we had variety shows. The school children put on plays every year, graduation ceremonies. There were meetings here. I have a picture. There's the basketball players. And this is a picture of the New Year's dance. This is the one exception to the canvas on the floor. They used powder and they had their dance. As you can see, this was a very formal dress-up affair. And I will mention, Holden was a dry town. You could not buy alcohol here, and it was never served in any public places. or at any of the public events. It was available in private homes, but not in public events. Formals, suits and ties. An orchestra was brought in from Wenatchee, and as I mentioned when I do my little trip about the kids, for kids not in high school kids were eligible to go to dance. It was a big babysitting night. The community Christmas tree was one of the most significant events. Started with school children singing, and then Santa would come and give a present to every child in town. Now, we only had 8 grades in school, but every child 0 through 8 got a present from Santa that was individually selected by age and gender. That changed slightly in 1952, but the community club sponsored the Christmas tree. And in 1952, when gambling was outlawed in Washington, the slot machines went away from the pool hall. They didn't have as much money, so the kids in the big room, we kind of got the short end of the stick. We didn't get, instead of individual presents, we got applets and cobbler boxes. I never had like that candy. This shows you how full the community Christmas tree went. You can see Santa leaning on the side, but you can see even the balcony is full. The bowling alley was a very important part of the recreation activities. They had men's and women's league. The standings were always posted in the local paper when we had the paper, but otherwise they had little tags that were movable about which teams were in first, second, and third place. The women's teams had nice names like the Dynamites and the Brass Hats and the Copper Queens. We also had junior bowling for kids if you were age 12 and older. And the village is still using the pin-setting machines. Those machines were a source of income for a lot of the dorm guys would set pins on league nights to make a little extra money. My brother and I, when we left here, we bowled in a high school league and went to an alley where they started having automatic pin setters. And we quickly observed that those automatic pin setters were way slower than these that set pins for us. Now the village has cheated a little bit. They've got motors on them now to push them down. The pool hall was very different than today. It was for people 21 and older only. As I mentioned, there were slot machines there at one time. There were the pool tables, but the more important function is the tables in the back, the poker tables. And there were poker games there pretty much 24 hours a day. But the nice thing about the poker tables is they left behind these wonderful chairs that you're all sitting in. If your parent had a hold of your hand, they could walk you through from the bowling alley and up the stairs, but you could never go in there by yourself. The fountain lunch was much more than an ice cream shop. It was a fountain lunch. This is the grill. This is where we had hamburgers, steaks. The men in the dorms liked to come and have steak sandwiches there. You can see that the stools went all the way around. I think they've kept 4 of them, so you can still see them. If you go and look at the back door, it still says fountain lunch on the outside. And this, again, was a popular place and source of recreation for the villagers. And like an ice cream, of course, was popular. I think the village used our milkshake machines for many years. They lasted.
Linda, did you say your mother worked here?
My mother did work in the fountain lunch. And I will mention, the women who worked in the fountain lunch and the mess hall were members of the miners' union. They had their own classification, so they made very good money. And my mom worked there because I had an older brother and sister boarding out to school. This is a picture of the school room. The school was opened in 1937. They were in a warehouse for most of the year. It was a one-room school, grades 1 through 8. We always only had 8 grades. After that, the kids had to board out to high school, and they went to high school at a variety of places. Some stayed with relatives, some went to boarding schools. Some girls in the 40s worked as domestics in Wenatchee to earn their room and board to go to high school. So it was a variety of things. This is a picture of the one of the classes in the early 40s. In 1939, it was divided into 2 rooms. They added a room on the back, and it was grades 1 through 4 and 5 through 8. By 1949, they added the T on the back of the building. The school is where Narnia is. And the grade division at that time, when I came in 51, it was 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, 6, 7, 8. But in the later years, the grade division varied depending on the population. When the baby boomers hit first grade in 1953, they had to open the basement because the baby boomers, the first grade, needed a full room by themselves. This is a picture taken in a 1950s classroom, and I believe this was taken in the winter of 55 and 56 because the windows are totally covered and the desks are turned with the back to the windows. Now, prior to that, the big room, quote, had its pecking order. You started by the blackboard and worked up. The eighth graders always got the window. The winter of 55-56 was the record snowfall here. They had over 600 inches of snow. And there was an article and pictures of Holden in Life magazine because many of the homes had tunnels into them because they could no longer clear the paths. Eighth grade graduation was a big event. Again, well attended by the community, and as you can see, a special dress-up affair, dressy dresses, corsages, and boutonnieres.
Linda, what are those you?
No, but my personal story is, the guy on the far right is my older brother Jim. He was the class speaker. The barber was out of town. Mom borrowed some clippers from the neighbor to trim him up. She just started up the back of his head and they shocked her and she went, So his instructions were, you walk forward, you never turn your head, you give your speech, you never turn your head, you back up and sit down. And I think he did pretty well. This is a picture, was taken by the Wenatchee Herald. This is the last day of school in Holden in 1957. And at that time, there were almost 120 kids in the class. The population of Holden at the peak was about 650. It was pretty sized. If you haven't been on my previous, and I'll show you, you'll see that. But there were over 100 homes up in Winston. This is a picture of Honeymoon Heights area. Most of the houses that were up there, when the house sound people started moving into them, they weren't building new houses. What they did was remodel the cabins and bunkhouses that had been built over the years when the various companies were in and leased the property. And the reason it became known as Honeymoon Heights is because the company had hired a whole bunch of engineers who were just graduating from college, and of course they're marrying their college sweethearts. And the sweethearts, the new brides, were not going to stay behind. So that's how it got the nickname Honeymoon Heights. And I'm not sure exactly how many, but we think there were 20-some up there. There's a gal who grew up here, Christy Plinton, did a master's thesis. And she did an eco-archaeological study of Honeymoon Heights. And she identified that there was even one small bunkhouse that two families had cut in half and pulled apart and made a duplex out. But once the mine operations started, first of all, it was very far from town and difficult to get up there and back. And the mine was shaking, with the vibration from the mine was shaking, and then there was concern of avalanche. So once the management homes were built and people started building in Winston Camp, it was abandoned pretty early. This is a winter picture of Honeymoon Heights with a different look. And then this is a picture of the circle, as we knew it. You call it Chalet Hill. These are the homes that were built by the company for their management and staff employees. And the house went with the position. The big one at the bottom, of course, was the general manager. The second one, Chalet 2, which burned and has been replaced by a lovely building. In the 60s, I guess, wasn't it, that Chalet 2 burned? Anyway, it was a guest house, it was called. And they had visiting people from other mines around the country and even some from other parts of the world that came here to look at the Holden Mine because it was considered a state-of-the-art operation. They developed some mining methodologies here and things they did, even environmentally, I know people are upset about the tailings and things, but they did some things that were advanced for that period of time based on what they were known. So this guest house also had an attic where we kept costumes that we used for our plays over the years, just as the village has a costume shop. We called ours the costume box. And we could also go up there at Halloween or other times. The third chalet, which is also pretty good sized, is where single management and staff employees live. And from there on up, the house went with the position. If you got a promotion, you might move a couple houses down the hill. This is a picture of Winston Camp. There were 101 homes up there. The bottom row, the houses faced one side only. They faced the creek, and there is a space on the bottom row where there are no houses because it was a very wet creek. The middle row and the top row, the houses were built on both sides. And again, on the top row, there's an open space where there were no springs. If I can line it up, there's the tree. My house sits right in there on the first row. And that big tree sat in our yard. And we had a garage, and I think you can kind of see the roof down here. So I didn't have to walk so far and climb the hill. These were very nice homes. They were equivalent to anything that was being built in small towns on the outside. They were small, they were compact, but our house had knotty pine paneling like in the DC. We had that in our living room and hallway. Our two upstairs bedrooms, when we bought the house, was pretty small, but my dad had it remodeled to knock the wall further down under the eaves and make sliding doors for storage because there were four of us kids. But we didn't have a lot of furniture, so you didn't need a big house. Kids today don't relate to the fact that my sister and I had a bedroom with two beds and a dresser. And then when the room got enlarged because she was a teenager, we got a little dressing table added with a stool, and I still have the stool. But they were very nice homes. This is a picture of that first row. That tin roof you see is actually our garage. The house, the big three-story house, was right in front of us. And this rock wall along here is still there. You can see that when you go up there today. And this is a winter view of the same area. That beautiful big tall tree by the three-story house actually sits in our front yard. And you can see how high the snow is piled on the rock wall. This is a picture of the middle row that gives you some idea how deep the snow piled up. The houses were high. The upper side of the road is the rock walls were built up. And on the lower side, they usually were sunk down. So the upper side, the houses sat pretty high. Youth activities were plentiful. This is a picture of Boy Scouts getting ready to go. We had Cub Scouts, Bluebirds, Campfire Girls, and Boy Scouts, all activities. And of course, in the village today, they have the minors and junior minors. I think we heard about the minors having some kind of a activity going on tonight, and of course the Narnia program. So there was plenty for kids to do, and they went on hikes. We did, the Campfire Girls did some overnight hikes, and both the Boy Scouts would go up to the outside to jamborees. The Campfire Girls went to Wenatchee once a year for a grand council fire. So youth activities were plentiful. Operettas, we did plays every year, and this is a picture of the Frog Prince, which was done in the 50s. Now, some of the costumes were made by the mother. Some were rented from outside. As you can see, the prince and his frog costume was also rented. The butler was rented. The queen's costume and the king's costume were reused from a previous play. We got those out of the costume box. They tried to put as many kids in as possible, so some of us were maids, and our mothers took our square dance outfits and they made these black cummerbunds, and that turned our square dance outfits into maid. That's the policy you guys have too, or we have today in the village, of make do with what you have. Bus arrival and departure didn't have the whole town out, but those that were going out or had company coming, it was a big event, and as you could see, very much a dress-up affair because you didn't go out very often. And you can see the ladies have got their nice coats on, the guy in the sports jacket. So it was important, just not as big a crowd to meet and greet. Fourth of July, which was a favorite time for kids, was a big day. And we also had a big picnic on Labor Day. The company sponsored the 4th of July, the union sponsored Labor Day. It would start in the morning with all kinds of races. This is a picture of one of the kids' races. We had gunny sack races and three-legged races. They had high jumping. I think they stopped the high jumping after Nigel Adams broke his arm. Diving over the bar. And then they would have log sign and nail driving contests for the women. And in the 40s, I read that they had egg and spoon races for the men and needle threading contests. This is up at the ballpark. Yes, this was at the ballpark. And then we also had pie eating contests, and they used two crusted berry pies. When we came, my older brother that you saw, boy, he got on that real quick. And the first picnic we went to after we moved here, the two-time champion was pretty unhappy because my brother wiped him out. And then at noontime, we had this huge picnic, and there was, used to be a big picnic area just beyond the ballpark with that stone fireplace in the center. And again, no alcohol served. We had one picture, it kind of showed, looked like beer bottles, but actually in those days, the root beer came in brown long-neck bottles. But anyway, so there was hot dogs and potato salad and all the foods you could want. Now, we didn't have parades in the mining days, although some of the boys would decorate their bikes and parade up to the ballpark at daytime. But for a couple of years, we had this little baton twirling group. The wife of one of the transportation guys had been a Chelan High School majorette, so she organized this little group. And our moms made our outfits. We all wore white blouses, and then they made the red skirts, and the hats are oatmeal boxes with the fabric glued on and the tassel added. And so we got to perform before the baseball game started. So that was kind of the replacement for the village parade. The baseball game after the picnic was very important, and baseball was played all summer long. You can see the size of the bleachers. And the morning, actually, I think I could have identified, the flagpole is right in this area. And we would always start the morning with our flag raising. And then they had these huge bleachers, and then the backstop was in the corner, kind of where the trails go now. And then on this side of the backstop, there was another small parking lot, a parking lot and a few small bleachers. Baseball was also played all summer long with different teams, and like basketball, they had teams that came in from the outside. In the late 40s, it was after the war, but there was a team from Larson Air Force Base, I think it was, that came up and played against the miners. There was news clippings about that. Skiing was also a very popular activity for us. And we had a rope tow up at the far end of Winston Camp off the top row. They had a big pole at the bottom. The motor was mounted on a toboggan. And so when there was enough snow, they'd take the toboggan up to the base of Martin Ridge and hook it up, and we had skiing. Once in a while, a little avalanche would come down and cover it up, and they'd have to go dig it out. But in the meantime, we had lots of beautiful skiing. And there were some years when the Boy Scouts would have ski races. Sledding, of course, was also popular. This is the last, it was the most popular sledding hill in Winston Camp. It's the last hill if you're walking out to the ballpark. It's the last road that goes up, and it's steep. Now, the bigger, if you went on my walk, the bigger kids, we like to start on another hill right near this from the top row and turn the corners and go all the way down. The kids from the circle would come up there to sled a lot, too, because they couldn't sled in town as long as the ore trucks were running. Unfortunately, by 1957, the ore body was running out, copper prices had dropped significantly, and the mill was wearing out. Those were the three factors that contributed. So at the beginning of April, the company announced they'd have a meeting. In the middle of April, they announced the official closure would be on July 1, 1957. When you bought your home, you knew that if the mine ever closed, you would have so long to salvage anything you wanted out of your house, and then they would be burned and destroyed. That was in your contract. Some people chose to dismantle their homes and take the lumber out. I'm not sure how many did that, but we know there were at least a couple that tore them down and took the lumber out and rebuilt elsewhere again, because everything that was moved out the company would move it to Chelan on the barge for free. Actually, it ended up being longer, but in 1963, in the spring of 1963, when there was about 3 feet of snow, a crew came in and burned the homes and then bulldozed too, because they were a fire hazard. And by that time, they'd been vandalized and some were falling down. But again, they were nice homes, but they were a loss. And if you go up there today, you can, especially since Wolverine and the brush clearing and fire, some of the artifacts are reappearing again. But you can find rock walls and foundations and stairways, and there's at least one stone outdoor stone fireplace that you can find. And if you go up to the top row, there's some clothesline posts, which, by the way, some villagers sometime within the past couple of years, the broken summertime clothesline post had fallen over. And it's been, one of them has been moved up the hill. And last year when I came back and they went out there to see things after the fire, someone said the cross survived. I didn't know what they were talking about. As soon as I turned the corner, there was Bob's clothesline post moved one lot east and turned, and it makes a wonderful cross. So when I went home and did my newsletter for the miners, I said, all is well, and I had a picture of the cross. It's really neat, but there are artifacts to find out there. And now we have another prospector. This is a prospector of a different kind. If you don't know this man, his name is Wes Preeb. And Wes Preeb read an advertisement about a mining town for sale, and he wrote a letter to inquire. He thought he'd make a good use camp. And he wrote a second letter. And Josh Post was telling me recently that he wrote them on April Fool's Day. I didn't know that before. And he wrote a third letter. And then he got a phone call, or he got a telegram telling him to call this man in Salt Lake City, Colette. Hal Sound had tried to sell the properties, and they had several options. And there was a group in Seattle that were working very hard to buy it and put a ski resort up here. But I think they really decided it was going to be too much of a hassle because, again, so much of the property is Forest Service, not owned land. And so it fell through. So Wes found out that they were willing to not actually donate, that they would sell it for a dollar. Cool. So he went to LDI in Seattle and said, look what I have. And they had no idea he'd even been writing the letters. And so we started. This is the early workmen that came. This is the group that came in 1961 that became known as the Forerunners. That International Trek is the bus they rode up on. Their clothing's a little different, but I can tell you the conditions were just as primitive. The power lines had been removed. After the mine closed, it was all electric, so there was no hot water, no electricity. This is a group on the lawn of the first chalet. The lady on the left is Bertha. She was their cook. She had a little wood stove, but most of the cooking was done on that little wood stove and those fireplaces behind the chalets. The guy in the middle with the helmet on is Gil Berg, and he was the one instrumental in organizing this work group, and also very instrumental in getting Holden Village set up as a nonprofit and for the to start forward with the village. Their major work, these kids, by the way, were recruited a lot through the Lutheran newsletters, but they were from colleges all over the country, and they came in. I'm not sure how many total there were. They stayed a month. And they did a lot of work. It was cleanup and repair was the name of the game. These guys are doing repair on the hotel chimney. A lot of the mattresses were still in there. They aired them all out to dry. Cleaning the inside of the door room. There's a lady, the Forerunners, which is one of the shows I'm going to show on Thursday night, that they did a slideshow, and she said, we used many rags. And if you look at one wall that's clean and the one under the sink that's not, you can get some idea. Keep in mind, these buildings have been sitting for 4 years now, and there had been vandalism and a lot of dirt and such coming in. All those little windows, and I forget the number, but there were a lot of them that were broken and had to be replaced. But look at the difference in the clean one and the dirty one. It gives you some idea of the work. Now, this group pretty much started with four elements that we still know today. They were volunteer labor. They had daily worship. They had study sessions. They had a nature person with them that held study sessions. And they had recreation. They did some hiking and stuff. And she talks about one afternoon they even climbed Martin Ridge to have their Bible study on Martin Ridge. And they started make do with what you got. A generator was brought in, so they went up to Miner's Village and found a washing machine and brought it down and hooked it up. Here they are on a hike. I believe this was up toward Cloudy Pass. This is one of their recreation activities. And unlike today, this was Sunday services. Look at them all dressed up here in the middle of nowhere. This is the last bridge that was left behind by Cal Sound Company. And this starts the mystery of the bridges. In previous years, I had another bridge that I had identified as the first bridge from the village. And we have recently learned that there is some confusion about the bridges. But this picture was taken in 1960, and we have a video we acquired recently. The man who worked on the close down crew took pictures from the spring on into the fall in the last day, and he has a picture of the footbridge that was there, and it has the metal cover. This is a picture of from Martin Ridge of what the village looked like in 1961. That's Chalet Hill with the TV antenna still on it. No trees, you notice. They've since grown up. And you'll notice the beautiful rock drainage ditch. Have you know, if you've walked up Chalet Hill at all, that ditch had disintegrated. Instead of replacing it with a cement ditch, they have restored it historically. It's built with the stone. Very pretty. This is a picture of Winston Camp as they saw it when they came. You can see that rock wall very clearly. And this is a picture taken after the burning in 63. This is a picture of the middle row. And this is a picture after the burning. Now this is the bridge that I had previously identified as the first village bridge that they built, but their records say it was here when they came. There was a young man that came up to the museum in 2007, I think. He thought he'd been a forerunner, but he figured out he was with the 1962 work group, and he went home and got out slides and did a little DVD, which is what I'm going to show. But he had a picture of this bridge taken, and he said that's what they went across to work. This is what he showed. So our mystery is, how did the bridge go from being uncovered to looking like this? And we don't know the answer. We speculate that perhaps someone from Lucerne needed a new rope on their cabin. Who knows? But apparently, this was the bridge that was here when they were here in 62. So that's a bridge mystery, but it is, again, the bridge that apparently the village was using. This is a picture of Carol and Mary Hinderly. He was the first director. They were here from 1963 to 1977 and basically started the village and set the foundation for what we know today. Again, using volunteer labor, daily worship, recreation, and study sessions. This is a picture of the dining hall being used. At this point, the picture's taken, they still had tables around. Now the village has since, of course, added the round tables. And the dining hall became much more. This is a picture of Beanie Lundholm. They had Beanie sings after dinner in the early years, and then over the time I've been coming every so often after dinner in the summer, and hopefully that'll start again. The songbooks get dug out and we have some Beanie sings. And of course, the bus arrival and departure, and now the beautiful loading dock to accommodate all the recreational gear. This is early services in the Village Center. Again, the Village Center is a multi-purpose, just like it was for us. Now, this is a picture of a high school prom. We did not have a picture when we were doing this program. Jerry Johansson from Illinois was helping me. He scanned a lot of the slides. So we went to the balcony and took a picture of the prom, and he tried to get in pretty close to the same location. If you look over at the wall, that would have been where the clock was in the mining days, to get the picture. Now, this was a little different as far as attire, because some of the costumes came from home and some came from the costume shop, and you can see this is here. Now, my favorite couple I like to show here are sitting in the audience today. This is Roy and Dorothy. Raise your hands. I love it because they went to the costume shop. Roy has a shirt, the tuxedo pants. I believe they had a cummerbund and a bow tie. And Dorothy has this darling little pink taffeta suit. And I think you had a little hat, Dorothy. It doesn't show in the picture, but you had a little hat, didn't you? So they were dancing at the prom. And I always show them when I do it because that's a good... I'm just delighted you guys are here to see. So this is... What year is this? I don't remember what year did. Jerry and I did this, I think, in about 2000.
Well, we were here all summer in 04, so...
That may have been when we did it. That may have been when we did it. That sounds about right. I came up here in the spring to play, and he was scanning slides, and we got into this and started doing all this stuff. And finally on Friday, I said, I gotta go home tomorrow. I haven't made a snow angel in my yard, and I haven't sleigh rided down the hill. We really got into the program. And this is how we got the picture. So, then this next picture I wanna, this is the start of adding flowers, which is changing us from industrial to retreat center. And the flower boxes are no longer there, but in the early 60s, Gertrude Lundholm and a few ladies, Beanie's wife, went up to Winston Camp, and she, over the period of a couple months that one summer, dug up and transplanted many of the iris beds you see down here, because the only flower beds down here in the mining days were the ones around the chalets. There was nothing around it, no flowers around any of the other buildings. And they transplanted all those irises. So this is showing the change. And then this was a dorm 5, but remodeled to make this lovely room, and they had offices upstairs. They still had, in the early years, they still had a few guest rooms upstairs, but ultimately it's been changed, and of course the craft happened. Now, I understand that fireplace chimney and the live fireplace didn't last too long for a couple of reasons. The chimney interfered when they started using large screens at that. And they also say that chimney sucked all the heat out of the building. But we still have the beautiful fireplace and a lovely meeting room. This is the first bridge that the village built in the 1970s, a wonderful sturdy bridge that carried us into the 21st century. This is a picture of the Holden School. This is the elementary room. The Holden School has 12 grades, and they have elementary and high school in most years, but in the last recent years, they haven't had as many students, and they've had mostly elementary. But at the time in the early 2000s, when these pictures were taken, they still had, I think it will take a while to get families with children back because these past few years during mine remediation, the long-term staff with children, their children could not be here in the summer. They were young children. So hopefully we'll start getting some back. But this is a picture of the elementary room. I had another picture in my old program that I'm trying to find to get duplicated. Ben Stewart's here. He was here last summer with his son, Forrest. When I was here teaching classes and showed it, and I have a wonderful picture of Forrest, who is a little teeny. He was a kindergartner because he wasn't legally old enough to go to school, but he was smart enough, and with a small school, they took him. Forrest is about 6'2 now, I think, or something like that. He said he spent 3 years in kindergarten. And this is a picture of a secondary high school. These teachers were Scott and Christine Olson, and I needed pictures of the school. They were kind enough to take them for me. And this is a picture of high school graduation, which is also a big event for the village. This is the graduate. Now, a little more casual. The village graduations are individually done. The kids, the graduates kind of decide how they want to have it done. The first one I ever attended, we started at the loading dock and followed the bongo drum player all the way to the third level. Those that couldn't walk that far rode up. They had some kind of block things with yard blankets on us for us to sit on. And the ceremony was being held up there. The speaker just started speaking when one of the Whidbey Island jets came screaming down the valley. So she had her personal flyby. Another one that I attended some years later started with the teachers, plus all the village people that help with teaching, which is not uncommon that different people in the village will teach special study subjects. And by the way, we had some of that in the mining days too. We had some of the music teaching time, and we got square dancing and things like that. But miners would teach special subjects. Anyway, they had gowns on, and then their cap or a sash or something represented whatever they taught. So the guy that was teaching computers had CD discs hanging, and the lady teaching music had a violin on her. And they all marched out, and the graduate, there was one graduate, came out. And there was a few comments and little speeches here. Then we all walked up to Chalet. I think she lived in Chalet 7, and her classmates, younger classmates, roasted her. Then we went to the dining hall, and there were a few speeches there, and then we ended up back in the gym where the school district people made the official presentations. Plays are also, this one is from the 70s. It was called A Night at Disney, and again, you make do with what you have. Mops make wonderful beards. And this is a picture of the pool hall in the village days, run by West Preed, PhD, pool hall director. He changed it into a family environment and had lots of decorations on the walls. The pool tables, of course, are available to all. And in the back, we have the game rooms. And I don't know, I believe that's the jukebox shown on the side in this picture. It's got that beautiful jukebox down there, too. Now, in the early years, they had 4th of July races, too. This is a picture, I believe, from the 70s. There was a fellow that had albums with some really good pictures. There was a second picture right next to this one. These guys were close to the finish line, and Wes Preeb jumped in front of them and ran across the finish line. But now, these days, at the 4th of July, the last ones I've been here for, they have, which has not been during remediation time, but they have a marathon instead of the actual races. They also, in the 70s, had pie eating contests. Now they, as you can see, used cream pies, which were probably easier to eat, but boy, were they messy. Look at it dripping down there. I don't think they're doing those anymore. And the parade. The summer themes are used, and I'm telling you, you haven't seen creativity if you haven't seen a Holden 4th of July parade. I should mention when I was showing the pie eating too, the kids' activities in the early years, they used to have milk carton regattas. They built their boats. Of course, there's no milk cartons anymore, but they would build their boats and take them up and put them in the stream below the hydro, and then whoever's boat made it to Railroad Creek first was the winner. Later years, they've been doing fishing and that on the village green. This one, I'm not sure what the theme was that year, but it's only the wise, the loom room is talking about Carol Hinderly's new clothes. Strike Up the Band. This is the 40 Years in the Wilderness Parade. And again, creativity. We had a huge band that year. The fella on the left in the skirt is Dwayne Landsberg's son. He was a high school band teacher. Dwayne was a longtime board member. And these ladies here, there's a group of ladies that have been in high school drill teams. They went down to the nature path. Can you see their pom-poms? They found these plants down there that were pom-poms, so they were the drill team. The band did the 40 years, they did the Red Sea formation. They parted. Pharaoh and his chariot garden cart started through and they collapsed on him. The baton is a genuine Holden Village baton. It is made of a broken pool stick. There's a rock from nature affixed with book tape from the library to make it balance and decorated with fabric from the craft room. And the baton twirler 50 years later was in that picture from the mining days.
Who is?
The creativity of the 40 years. Moses, are you here? I'm not sure he is. Lauren Harvath was Moses. The Hike House had Moses stagger down the street. He collapsed. They came out with their little gurney to rescue him, loaded him up, carted him away, and held up their sign and said, Moses lacked the 10 essentials. The laundry ladies outdid him a little bit. They had two poles with a line, and I don't know where they got all these, but it started with bloomers that were below the knee in length. They had a short pair of bloomers. They had brief panties. They had bikinis, and they ended with a thong. You got to come to a July 4th parade here at Holden Village. And of course, outdoor picnics, not just for the 4th of July. They have them regularly here, although the 4th of July one is interesting. Now, the village has one thing that we never had. They have a fireworks show. If you haven't been here, you've missed a grand fireworks show. We go after Vespers, they turn on the music, they show the pictures of the beautiful fireworks on the screen, and everybody pops bubble wrap and twirls their flashlights on the scene. And of course, the village has skiing. Now they are pretty much cross-country skiing, not the downhill skiing like we have, but again, very, very popular. This is more current services. At this one you can see, this has been since the ceiling's been painted and the new cross. And now, and I want to read it. This is our new bridge that was installed last year. During the past 4 years of mining radiation, there were no summer guests. Now we are beginning together, and we have another beautiful bridge, a new ADA bridge. All can cross this bridge. May it be there for many more generations to come and to enjoy the spirit and treasures that abound in this valley. All who come to the village, whether returning guests from previous years or newcomers, will be able to enjoy the same breathtaking beauty of the valley experienced by the early prospectors, the Hausau miners and families, and the early villagers who built the foundation for this wonderful place. May all who come, whether to work or be a guest, leave with a feeling of renewed spirit and even faith. Thank you.